normally does. What does normally does mean? Normally does, in this illustration, means one raise of $20,000, and you say, I don't accept that. That's fine. What you've got then is you've got a rating of 25. It was under $20,000. And you're going to be looking at that rating in relation to the class ratings the courses have earned that are to enter today for $32,000. Okay. So that's what you're left with. Maybe the 25 is the better estimate of what the course will earn against 32,000 than this 1.67. But if you had a situation where this course that earned a 1.67 today had been racing for a while and had several ratings, and each time you updated the performance index by, let's say, using the best three out of the last six races, it was coming out close to 1.67 most of the time, reliably. That's a different situation entirely. Now you've got a horse that has shown you in a consistent pattern that it normally runs a performance index of about 1.67. It's entered today for 32. You've got a better estimate that horse is likely to earn about 35 points. So that's the way I would use it. So it's kind of a double answer to your question, but I think it's the correct answer.
Is there any way to use the amount the PI is above par, say the 0.67 in this case, to predict how high in class the horse can rise today?
By both, how would you do that?
I'm just asking.
Yeah.
Let's say the PI is 2.5, would you say that horse is more likely to run today at 32,000?
Oh, I see. Your question is, good question. To the extent the PI is above par, that should be some indication that the horse is more likely to exceed par in closely related class levels. I agree. Yeah. It turns out that this tends to be a very high PI, 1.67, not many horses own. Don't forget, this method discounts performances that are either weak on speed or weak on competitiveness. You've got to be good on both to get a high, strong rating in this method. It's a tough method to earn high ratings on. It really is. A 1.67 is a very high PI in this method. So if you get a horse that's showing you 1.67s with some consistency or even a couple times, I would predict that class jump is more likely going to work out okay. I like that. That's a real good application. That's what these kind of statistics are meant for. Most of them will be around 1.2 to 1.33, something like that. Most of them.
So have you done any work to quantify that, to say that a 0.3 indicates one class rise?
No. Why don't you do it?
Send the feedback.
Now, I'd love to have that kind of data. I really would. Now, how high up can 1.33 horses go? Do they go up 33% higher than the previous class level? Is there that kind of correlation? So, one way of thinking of that would be, this horse can withstand a 67% rise in class. Can you say that? And if one had a 33.1.33, can this horse stand a 33%, or you would predict this horse can withstand a 33% rise in class? That's one way of thinking about it, one body of data to start looking at. Bill Quirin is a statistician. Dr. Sartin is an empiricist, what I call an empiricist. The difference between those two birds, believe me, And they go about doing their research in entirely different ways. The empiricist just looks at a large body of data in the field. He makes observations of large bodies of data in the field and starts to observe patterns and relationships and says, like you just said, this looks interesting, What about if a horse gets 1.6? Does that mean he can rise 67% in class? You might say, that sounds reasonable. Then the empiricist has to go back and take that piece of data and that hypothesis or that proposition and look at that large sample of races again and see if that works out. And the reason I don't like empirical research, first of all, it's really a hard grind. It's messy. It's hard to do. It's drudgery. And it usually doesn't work. That's the bottom line with empirical research. The answer is usually no. That's why statisticians and scientists, they're not very comfortable with empirical research, because they know it's messy, sloppy, and it usually doesn't work. There's one other problem with it, too, and it applies to handicapping. I happen to think empirical research is the right kind of research in handicapping, because that's what handicapping is. It's large, large masses of data with lots of factors, lots of relationships, lots of interactions, which are unpredictable by typical statistical methods and all that. It's highly empirical to do this kind of research. The problem with it is it has what the researchers call real poor external validity. That's the term. And that means that it doesn't generalize well from this sample to this sample. Empirical research is usually descriptive in the sense that it just describes the large sample of races you're looking at. And so it's the same thing with the Sutton method. You know, you're looking at a large group of races. And those races are in Southern California, Northern California, wherever they are. You find these relationships, and look at this, it works. When you try to implement it somewhere else, it tends not to work as well, or it works differently somewhere else, because the sample somewhere else has different characteristics. That's a fundamental characteristic of empirical research. So when you come out with a method like this, it's based on a sample of 500 races at Santa Anita Park over a relatively short testing period, what you have to say to the user group is, hey, I found this, and here's what happened when I did this at Santa Anita. And I'm suggesting that this might work at other major tracks, too. But then the burden kind of becomes on to replicate the study in with other samples that are slightly dissimilar from the sample you worked with. See, Bill Quirin doesn't do that. His work is statistics. His generalizes really well because it involves thousands of races and national samples, and it's just looking at statistical relations, associations, usually one, two, or three factors at most. Much more stable relationships. Like he wants me, for example, he has asked me several times in the last year or two, he wants to study the Sarkin methodology in terms of his impact studies that he does. What's the percentage of starters that have this characteristic? What are the percentage of winners that have this characteristic? See, if somebody comes along and says, the ATV horse wins 93% of the time, and Bill Quirin comes along and says, well, 93% of the starters have that characteristic. It's the old story like 85% of all winners have raced in the last 2 weeks. Well, Quirin just demonstrated that 85% of the starters raced in the last 2 weeks. You would expect 85% of
them. 100%
of the winners have jockeys on.
That's right. That's a great one right there. But empirical research is really I hate to do empirical research because of the way it is. It's a messy type of research.
If you take the example of the horse with a PI of 167 and you multiply the $20,000 claimer, and let's assume that you can use that example, that means he can run a 32.5, it's approximately 2/3 higher. Does he take with him that ability to beat par, or does he lose that in the move up, and then is he equal to a 32,000 claimer that has 1.0?
Yeah, he probably loses this advantage on the move up to some extent. So what you really get, for example, a better statistic would be a PI of 1.67 with a confidence interval or a range of plus or minus 0.40, something like that. You know? So now he's moved from 20 to 32, and we subtract the 0.40. We knew that that was the thing, and we only multiply it by 1.2. But I don't think that's necessary. I mean, what's necessary is that you know that the horse did this in relation to this. He's moving up, so you know, like you just said, it's probably not going to do quite as well. So I multiply the new par by 1.67, I get a 35, but I really expect the horse to fall somewhere below that 35. He's really going to be between 25 and 35, somewhere. And that's the way you go about it. So it becomes a really highly interpretive type of thing. See, that's what I would do. If this particular horse had earned this figure in a highly competitive race at this level, was moving to 32, I'd go through the process of multiplying this by 21, which is 35. And then I would say, well, I really don't expect this horse to do quite as well. That's my estimate. All measurement is an estimate, either good or bad. That's my best estimate is around 35. But really, my expectation is a little bit less than that. But I don't think he's quite that good at this level. It's somewhere between 25 and 35, but I'm not exactly
sure. Make it 30.
Make it 30. That's what That's what statisticians do all the time. Make it 30. That's the way you have to do it.
Jim, what's that second column to the right mean? You have PI in the box, then you have RC, is it? I can't see.
Yeah, that's the, there's one other statistic that you can use on this, which I like also. Not only do we have class pars, but this method has top ratings for every class that can be earned. And the top rating is equal to, okay, the best rating that you can earn on both the speed end and the competitive end of a race. So in the case of a $20,000 horse, for example, the most class speed points a $20,000 horse can earn in this method is 7. If he runs an adjusted time, 1 second faster than par. And the highest CQ rating, of course, is 5. So 5 times 7 is 30 pars. The top rating that a $20,000 horse or a $25,000 horse can earn using this method is 35 points. But we'd like to have some kind of index of what proportion of the best rating any particular winner can earn. And the way to do that is to just take the class rating that a horse has earned and divide it by the best rating that is possible to earn at this level. So in this case, of the horse that earned the 25 points, that divided by 35 is approximately 70%. This horse earned about 70% of the best performance rating that a horse can earn at this particular level. The other horse who earned only 15 points earned about 43% of the total class rating that a horse can earn at this level. Notice that even though this was par and the PI is 1, in this case, the PI is less than half. Even though this was 15, 15 is not 1/2 of 35. It's a little bit less than half. I said earlier that this method puts some emphasis on the competitive factor in relation to speed. If this method emphasized speed and competitiveness equally, this horse would earn a relative class rating of 0.50, 1/2 the total points. The top rating would be 30 for this particular class. But I'm putting a little bit more emphasis on the competitive side of this equation. And that's why this RC rating, this relative class rating, is below 0.50. I just like that. It's my own point of view, and I built that in.
I was just going to say that now this RC rating is projected a little like, say, Quirin's ratings, where over 1 means that much of a percentage more than what the animal has earned, what the horse has earned.
That's the PI rating. PI rating are similar to any other kind of index, which where 1 is equal to what
in terms of a percentage, right.
In terms of percentage, and higher is better than par, better than what's normal. And lower is not as good as what's normal.
So,
but this other rating down here is based on the proportion of class points or class
that are allotted.
This horse earned in relation to what the best horse at this class level can earn. It's always going to be less than 1, unless he earns the high rating.
Okay.
It's a proportion of the total rating at any class level. That's what it is, a percentage.
Okay.
And that's the way to interpret that. Is just to remove the decimal point and consider this to be a percentile rank.
Okay.
So in other words, if I took all the $20,000 horses in the United States, this horse who earned 25 points in relation to 35 and earned a ranking of about 0.70, that was his proportion. If you just remove the decimal point and say, this horse can beat approximately 70% of all the $20,000 claiming horses he's going to face. That's the way to interpret it.
That's all right.
Yeah. As I said, this is a very high PI. This is not typical at all. Take the guy that earned the 15 points, which is much more typical. Mm-hmm. 15 over 35 is about 0.43. Just remove the decimal point, consider that a percentage. The interpretation is, this horse ranks at about the 43rd percentile of all the $20,000.
Not very good.
On the circuit or in the division or in the country, we're considered. This method can be transported among all circuits. This other guy, who only earned a 5, he only earned 1/7 of the total number of class points or class rating available at the $20,000 level, which is a ranking of about 0.14 or 14%. He ranks really low in relation to all the possible horses at that particular level. PI is much more useful in working with these two statistics. The PI is much more useful in rating claiming horses, particularly older claiming horses. And this one is much more useful in ranking non-claiming horses, particularly the developing three-year-olds. That's why I use two of them. You don't really care how $20,000 claiming horses rank in comparison to one another. You know, what you really care about, because they're moving all over the place all the time. You want to get a stable PI for them and multiply it by today's PAR, that's your best estimate of the class rating they might earn. But for the non-claiming horses, you want to know this.
Right.
This is what you want to know.
Everybody in a grade one race, for example, should have a 0.70. I mean, what I'm saying is that if they are a true live contender for the for the winning of that purse, they should be at 0.70.
Right. See, in the non-claiming horses, it doesn't matter. You could use this in a way, no matter where the horse ran, let's say in the non-winner series, the classified race, or any of the lower grade stakes races, open races, whatever, they're going to earn some relative class ranking. Okay? And you can use those rankings to kind of compare unfamiliar horses with one another. This method worked really well, for example, with Ferdinand during 1986 when I was using this. I had him ranked at about the 64th percentile. Now this is somewhat hypothetical. What it really means is that if Ferdinand faced all the stakes horses in the three-year-old division, theoretically all of them, he'd rank about the 64th percentile if this method is an accurate predictor. That includes everybody. It includes secretary, it includes all. You can go back and look at all the horses. If I had him at the 64th percentile, I had him highest going into the Derby last year. Now, it was a very poor method for Snochi because I didn't have the data. Snochi had run twice in Florida and once in Northern California, and I didn't have the data for the two Florida wins. I didn't have these ratings, and I couldn't get the basic points. I couldn't do the basic procedures. So I had to use an asterisk with Snochi. But just using its Santa Anita races, Snowchi was at the 36th percentile. Snowchi ranked really low on this method. Each time I did on this method, so it was an artificially low rating. He was a better horse than that, which he demonstrated a lot later. But going into the Derby, I really thought he was a very highly overrated horse. So doing all the favor, I thought he was really vulnerable. So he's kind of proved me wrong in his four-year-old year. And I've changed my tune on Snowchi. I had my doubts about him for a long, long time.
How about the Belmont that year when Ferdinand got beat? Now, does your method, mud and whatnot, that upsets you quite a bit.
Yeah, right. Plus, he was the favorite by that time. I liked him at 17-1 in Germany.
And in Belmont, I think he didn't have that medication.
Normally,
that's last year.
This wrong. Last year.
He agreed. Say you run 10 of the same class horses. You're not going to jump from 1 to 167 normally. Right? You make like a 2 or 3 or 5 point difference.
Yeah. You can use it. There are really three statistics: the basic class rating, the PI, the performance index, how well in relation to PAR, and the relative class. What proportion of the total class ratings available with this class did this horse earn? There's those three statistics. And if you want, you can just use the basic class rating, just use the numbers. They get. They serve a lot of purposes, most purposes. It's like anything else, you know, the basic stuff usually serves purposes.
Gentlemen, back in there trying to ask you a question for 20 minutes.
I'm sorry.
It was a beautiful life.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to ask you a question.
He came up with it.
Oh, you answered it. That's why I stopped. I get worried because you're having fun.
Okay.
Is that RC just another name for your Blue Boy rankings?
Yeah, I should mention that. I called these Blue Boy rankings in the book because I was hoping that term would catch on.
It did. A guy painted it for Gatesboro or somebody.
You know what that was? That was a derivative of Blue Blood. You know, breeding the Blue Bloods are the best sires. You know, and the sons and daughters of the Blue Bloods are the prestigious horses. And I figured, well, a Blue Boy could be the best racer. Others are susceptible to those kinds of those kinds of it doesn't work like empirical research.
I got my rebuttal right here.
When you were looking just at the result charts, checking, actually watching the races and errors, were the errors random, or did you tend to cluster toward the center more, or one end or the other?
You know where a lot of the errors were? They tended to cluster toward the lower end more than the higher end. You know why? Whenever you give a CQ rating of one or two, you have to go back and look at the race again. What I did a lot, I missed the number of projected ratings that I should have given. That was one of the procedural kinds of talents that I had. You know, where a horse would go like wild wire or just blow by the field at a certain point, and I'd start rating the race one or two, and really the winner should have had a projected rating. And I didn't give it. That was one of the hang-ups that I had about doing it. But in general, they were just... One of the things that came out well was that I was predicting if the races were distributed in this normal pattern and this factor called competitive, because you can fit about what percentage of races should fall at each point, if you know what a normal curve is. And that fell out just right, almost just right. I was really happy with that, because that has to be right. And if that's not right, you can't use the rating scale. It's a bad scale. If they're all clustering at one or two instead of being distributed, right? The distribution was pretty good. So I like that. Usually you'll just get 5% of the races on either extreme. 90% of the races will be either 2, 3, or 4. And the other 10 would be 1 or 5. Now, working with the extremes too often. But it's important to become somewhat practiced with it and try to reduce the errors as much as possible, because this rating really drives this final rating. That's what it's intended to do. It's intended to wide differences in ratings based on the competitive quality of race. That's what I'm trying to get at and illustrate. So in the book, for example, I spend a chapter on interpretation of use, and one of the things I get, because another question I always get other than that results charts question, is you tend to get wide screens of the ratings, like this, and which rating should I use, then becomes a question. You always use the more competitive rating, and the reason for that is that you want to evaluate the horse when it's really shown you what it can do, when the race has demanded a certain amount of speed plus always some challenges too. That's when you really want to evaluate the horse. That's when you got a good read on what that horse can show you. So if you have these ratings, some are high, some are low, tend to use the high ones as your predictor today if you consider the horse a strong factor in today's race.
Can you briefly explain your workout? Were you just using the basic class ratings, or were you incorporating some of these other things?
I was using the basic class ratings.
Okay, were you pretty much giving every horse in the race a rating and using the last race, or were you doing, you know, a la Sarton, where you're looking for pace lines and contenders? And
I was giving just about every horse in the race
a rating. And were you pretty much using just the last race in this particular workout?
Right. It's not in all cases, though. In some cases, I would pick the next to the last race because I thought the last race was not representative for some reason. It wasn't the right rating to use to study today.
But we're using the last race more often than not in this particular.
Absolutely. The great majority of time. The great majority of time. This data is highly accurate data. I should say something about it. I didn't expect this to perform as well as it did. Mm-hmm. And the reason it performed as well as it did was that in claiming routes, in routes for overclaimer horses, this method was able to identify a number of nice overlays. Not 25 to 1 charge, 20 to 1 charge, I think, but horses that were going off 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 to 1. Mm-hmm. They picked enough of those. Now, the win percentage in the claiming races, if you took out just the claiming races, the win percentage went down to 0.30. It was 3 out of 10. But the average odds on the winners in those races was 9 to 2. It was really good. So just the opposite in the non-claiming races, the win percentage went up to 0.36, but the average odds on the winners was 2.3 to 1. In those races. It showed a loss in straight maiden races. Mm-hmm. It couldn't show a profit on straight maiden races. It was a 12% loss. So it didn't work out at all in straight maiden races.
Or this method.
This method.
I promote that.
Financial.
Did you quantify them as far as like application to Dr. Sergeant's methodology.
That's the afternoon.
Yeah, I haven't done any of that.
You haven't?
We're gonna do that this afternoon. We're gonna do that this afternoon.
It is this afternoon.
There's a man with an uncomfortable chair.
Think up your questions, kid. We know that's why we're here all day. We'll do it this afternoon, and Tom will fill the application, and James will track it after we clarify it. So any questions you have, submit them in your line. Briefly, Chris is.
I've learned how to provoke you.
Because I couldn't add two and two and together, I had to get the graduate school. I take remedial math, which was a form of graduate statistics. And James Quinn, being a doctor of philosophy, and he knows that Spinoza and Immanuel Kant were empiricists. They started the age of empiricism in philosophy. Spinoza was a very subjective empiricist. He said, I think, therefore I am. But Immanuel Kant came up with theses, hypotheses, and syntheses, which was to utilize every extreme and then synthesize it into a reality that would be common to all people. The two great philosophers, doctors of philosophy and study, who were mathematicians and statisticians, were Pascal, who invented roulette, which is a negative expectancy game, and Descartes. Descartes is a man who is famous for saying, always put Descartes before the house.
That's awesome.